Up next, we've got a style segment on Oktoberfest. The largest beer festival of them all, Germany's Oktoberfest, has been canceled for the second year in a row thanks to the pandemic. While everyone has heard of Oktoberfest, you may not be familiar with its particulars. What began as a royal wedding celebration in 1810 has grown into the largest beer festival in the world, with about 6 million visitors each year. Normally, it's held from the last 2 weeks in September through the first weekend in October in Munich, the capital of Bavaria in southern Germany. The original festival was held in October, hence the name, but was moved forward into September in the 1870s in search of consistently better weather. What breweries are allowed to have their beers served at the festival is also strictly regulated. Only the 6 large breweries that brew beer within the city limits of Munich are allowed to deliver beer to the festival. Smaller Munich breweries and those from outside the town are strictly banned. While the fest itself may be canceled this year, plenty of breweries around the world have already begun releasing their Oktoberfest-style beers. It's a popular myth that there has only been one distinct style of beer brewed for Oktoberfest, but the historical evidence shows that there have been many changes in the beers served at the festival. For the first 60 years or so, the then popular style of Bavarian Dunkel, a dark lager beer, seems to have been dominant. As a side note, my sources tell me that Kenai River Brewing is planning to brew a Dunkel Wiesen, which is a variation of this style brewed using wheat as an ingredient, in the near future, perhaps for release at the 2022 Frozen River Festival in February. A shortage of Dunkel during a particularly hot summer in 1872 led to the introduction of the Märzen or Vienna-style lager, which was so popular that it became the dominant style of beer at the festival for over 100 years, eventually earning the name Oktoberfest style. Ironically, changing tastes in the late 20th century have meant that since the 1990s, all the beers served at the festival have been pale golden Helles lagers rather than the traditional Oktoberfest style. So what is this traditional Oktoberfest beer like? Much of the base malt is the so-called Munich malt, a highly aromatic malt which produces a light amber to nearly brown beer. It's hopped with traditional German hop varieties to produce moderate hop bitterness with little to no hop flavor, coming in at 18 to 24 IBUs. Fermentation using lager yeast produces a clean, rich, toasty, and bready malt flavor with a dry finish that encourages another drink. The overall malt impression is soft, elegant, and complex, with a rich aftertaste that is never cloying or heavy. If you're looking for a local example, St. Elias Brewing frequently offers this style in September, while versions from larger craft brewers like Sierra Nevada and actual imports from Germany are already available in some local liquor stores. When it comes to pairing this beer with food, you'll find that Oktoberfest works well with all sorts of hearty dishes like chili or barbecue brisket. It also pairs well with Caesar salad, macaroni and cheese, apple or pumpkin pie, and even pancakes or waffles. A more unusual pairing, but one that works especially well, is to match this German beer with the Americanized version of a classic Russian dish, beef stroganoff. The brown steak and mushroom flavors have a nice interplay with the beer's caramel malt notes. The rich and creamy sauce matches the toffee notes found in the beer, while the moderate carbonation helps lift the sauce, cleanses the palate, and makes you ready for the next bite. Whether you call it Märzen, Vienna Lager, or Oktoberfest, this classic German style is definitely one of the most popular fall seasonal beers out there, and definitely worth seeking out to be enjoyed. Carrie Fristo of Black Spruce Brewing Company of Fairbanks. Carrie, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, I'm doing really well, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. So it's been a while since we had you guys on. I think we had you on shortly after you opened. So why don't you bring everybody up to speed on how things have been going, how you guys have weathered the COVID storm, and everything else that's happening up there in Fairbanks.
Yeah, sounds good. It definitely feels like it's been about a million years since we last talked on the show here. Things have been going, pretty well, all things considered, with kind of the last year with lockdowns and, you know, consumer confidence not being super high. But it seems like through that, we've been able to manage, keep cranking out beers, and have been having a lot of fun innovating some different products, different beer styles we've been doing that haven't really been seen too much in these parts. So that's been really awesome. And definitely have had some big pivots as far as weathering the COVID storm, which we can touch on a little later too.
Well, hey, big recent news, right? You guys won an award up there in Fairbanks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we're pretty shocked and humbled. We got voted as the Daily News Miner, the local newspaper up here, their Reader's Choice for favorite microbrewery / distillery in the interior. So that was, yeah, like I said, a huge shock, super humbling. We were all super thrilled, and it's cool to see all of the hard work that our team's been putting in pay off with something like that. Really cool.
So what sort of beers you're offering, your flagship brews, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we first talked last time, we had our three flagships, which we've kind of gone to four. One of them sort of a rotating flagship. And out of those original three, we still have the Aromadome IPA, which, as a reminder, we have a 10-barrel brew house, and we actually just got our first 20-barrel tank. So that's just for the Aromadome IPA, because that's just been blowing up for us, which has been super awesome. So we've still got that one rocking and rolling. And then the other flagship that's still alive and kicking is the Short Days Golden Ale. That one's our really nice, light, easy drinking ale. And we've, you know, kind of been making small tweaks on both of those, but for the main part, they're still true to where they were 2.5 years ago. And then sadly, the Squiggly Trees Brown Ale that we started with is no longer with us. I do want to bring that one back at some point. We still have people come into the tap room asking about it. But that one's been replaced by Vernal Buzz, which is a milk stout that we condition on vanilla beans and then some locally roasted coffee from Little Owl Cafe here in Fairbanks. And that one, pretty much as soon as we put it on, became a crowd favorite, and it's been on ever since. Then finally, the fourth, I say, kind of rotating flagship is one that, again, we kind of brewed once and it just took off, and we haven't looked back since then. And that one's called Wow Real Fruit, and it's kind of a smoothie style sour. So we brew a kind of a similar to our like hazy IPA base to it. So heavy in wheat, malted wheat, and then some flaked oats in there to give it some nice thick body to it. And then we sour that one with lactobacillus in the fermenter for a day, and then pitch our yeast that ferments. And then when it's almost done fermenting, we add in a boatload of fruit puree. And so for that one, we're at about 2 pounds of fruit puree per gallon of beer. So it is very fruit forward. It's got sweetness. There's some lactose in it, so that helps with the body and the residual sweetness. And then it's got the acidity from that lactobacillus. And then we condition that on Madagascar vanilla as well to kind of give it that smoothie, creamy characteristic, kind of culminate in that really nice, rich drinking experience. And for that one, we rotate through fruits on it. It's every two batches because we've been going through quite a bit of it, and it was getting a lot to be doing different fruits every 2 weeks. So now it's about every month we're swapping fruits on that. The latest one we just did is a plum apricot, and perfect for transition into fall time. Kind of interesting, it in the final product, it ended up almost tasting like cotton candy, which was super weird, and we were not expecting that, but super tasty.
Well, those certainly sound interesting as far as that combo that you were describing. That definitely something to taste. Are you guys still strictly selling at your brewery? Are you distributing at all?
Yeah, so we're still doing a lot right out of the tap room, but kind of as we've gotten more comfortable with our the brewery and production and stuff, we've been reaching out to different accounts around town and have actually started to have different places reach out to us, which is awesome. So we have a handful of accounts in Fairbanks that we do draft out to, you know, different bars and restaurants. And we go around and clean the lines at those accounts and, you know, make sure their draft system is up to snuff for what we're doing. And then we have, I want to say around 7 or 8 accounts down in Matsu Valley and in South Central and Anchorage, which are mostly draft. And then we have a couple that we do sell our 16-ounce 4-packs to as well, cases of beer. Intensity regularly has our draft on, Rustic Goat, Hearth, and then for cans, La Bodega usually takes a bunch. Gold Rush Liquor takes some in Anchorage as well as far as cans. And then in Matsu Valley, Palmer Ale House takes it. Corks and Hops in, I guess they're in Eagle River. They have Aromadome on, and then Connect Country Liquor just started taking cans as well. So they distribute to, I think, a couple of their locations as well.
Okay. That's more likely where any of our listeners would hit it. But obviously, if they're up in Fairbanks, they should check you guys out and come to the brewery itself.
So. Yes, definitely.
Why don't you describe your tap room operation? How many taps do you have? What sort of hours do you keep? Do you have food? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, so we're open Monday through Friday from 3 to 8, and then Saturdays from noon to 8. We generally try and keep at least, I mean, I like to have at least 10 beers on. This summer was definitely a challenge for us, just being super busy, and which is great. Is great, but we dip down below the level of beers I like to have on at any given time. And then we also actually have our winery license. So we produce a cider as well. And I'm hoping to kind of expand that out a little bit as we're playing catch up with our beer. And then we also just released a birch soda, which we're pretty excited about as a non-alcoholic option that utilizes some local birch syrup collected in the interior. And that's a project we've been working on with One Tree Alaska, which is kind of a birch cooperative up on the UAF campus. So we have our second batch of that on tap right now, which is pretty cool.
Sounds great. You guys have any kind of a food truck arrangement or anything like that? If people come to your tap room, should they expect to be able to get anything to eat?
Yeah, so we have food trucks on a couple times a week. It's not every day. You can look on our website for an up-to-date list, and then usually day of we'll post like a Instagram, Facebook story showing who's here. And that'll probably be winding down here shortly as we get into fall and winter, as a lot of the food trucks are unfortunately not weatherized for, you know, 20 below during the winter.
All right. Well, have you got any upcoming new releases that you want to brag about?
Yeah. So we actually just got done packaging a collaboration we did with Girdwood Brewing. They came up here a couple weeks ago, and we've been doing a couple different milkshake IPAs with them. And this is the first one we've brewed with Girdwood up at our place, so we're pretty excited about that. And if people don't know, a milkshake IPA is sort of in the vein of hazy IPAs, where it's a little bit sweeter, not quite as bitter, nice thick body to it. And in the milkshake IPA, you use a little bit of lactose, and then typically they have some sort of fruit added. So this one is an acai bowl inspired milkshake IPA. So it has acai berry puree. It's got strawberry, blackberry purees, and then conditioned it on maple granola, coconut chips, and then vanilla as well. So it's definitely got that breakfast bowl vibe going on. Actually sipping on one of those right now, and it's tasting really good. So that one's a pretty cool one we've been doing. And then got a couple new double IPAs that we're going to be packaging up here soon that are pretty tasty, working on testing out different hops and some new hop products as well.
All right. Well, sounds good. Congratulations again on your award. Things keep going well for y'all up there. And hopefully we'll see more of your beers. Maybe see you down here for the Frozen River Festival in February.
That'd be cool to go down. I've heard it's a blast.
It's warmer than Fairbanks. It's still like in the teens, but it's warmer than Fairbanks.
Very true.
Well, hey, Carrie, thanks again for taking the time to talk with us. Really appreciate it, and good luck. Well, that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. Before we go, how about this month's beer quote from that great writer, Hunter S. Thompson? Good people drink good beer. On that note, cheers.
Settle for the first, for it might be the worst.